everyone, and welcome back to Queer Mountaineers. I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon, and this episode, we are opening up Season 4 with our very first guest, musician Sir Dolan G. At the time that this episode was recorded, Dolan's EP, Queer Vespers, was not out yet, so we refer to it in a future tense, but good news for you, you don't have to wait. Go listen to Queer Vespers, now available on whatever music streaming platform you have. So go give that a listen after listening to their episode. And now, let's hear from Dolan.
Do you mind telling people who don't really know who you are a little bit about yourself and your pronouns and all that good stuff?
Yeah, of course. My name is Dolan Halkis. I go by Sir Dolan G when I'm on stage. I use they, them, and he, him pronouns, and I'm a senior at West Virginia University. I am working towards my BM in voice performance and a BA in contemporary and integrative performance. So I've got a lot going on.
That's awesome. I mean, that... Like WVU has got a really awesome music program. I know a bunch of different people who've come out of there and they're all really cool people. So, what got you into coming to WVU?
Well, that's a good question. It was kind of just far away enough from, I'm from Pittsburgh, so it was just far away enough from my hometown that my parents wouldn't, you know, come visit every weekend, but they'd still be able to come to my concerts. I actually came here my junior year for a mock audition. So the faculty already knew who I was, and really they were one of the programs that accepted me, and I was really excited to come and study here. And I originally just came for classical voice performance and then got into the jazz program, and that is quite the interesting story if you'd like to hear it.
I'd love to hear it if you want to share it.
Awesome. Well, so it is really funny the way I came into jazz. I was kind of one of the like Stevie Wonder's cool, but I don't really know that much about jazz kind of people. And in my first semester here, my English professor, Professor Alvarez, she's married to the jazz professor, Dr. Sims. And I wanted to do a little interview report style piece on jazz because I didn't really know a lot about it, but I was it's pretty cool. She goes, oh, that's, you know, funny story. My husband's the professor of jazz here. You should interview him. And I was okay. And then I had my interview with Dr. Sims, and he says, you should come sing at jazz night. And I was that is mildly terrifying, but really cool. And so I went and performed at jazz night. And he was like, hey, you should join our vocal combo. And I was that is much more mildly terrifying, but even more cool. And after that, I was like, wow, this is really cool. I really want to take jazz lessons and start making that a part of my life. And so I initially had a minor in jazz, and then I switched all of my jazz stuff over into my contemporary and integrative performance once I added the major. But it's one of those when the right doors open, you just gotta walk right through them.
Exactly. So what kind of made you go from jazz is cool, but I don't know too much about it into, you know, wanting to, influence by that style of music and perform it and all that good stuff?
I honestly think it was the first jazz night I went to. I'd never really heard any live jazz music, but I walked in there and I was really just astounded. Just immediately upon walking into Morgantown Brewing Company, I was just filled with emotions, sensations, feelings, all of my senses were just going 100 miles an hour. And then the first time I sang, I sang a song I knew from a musical, but that was also kind of a jazz standard. And boy, it was the scariest thing I've ever done. I knew nothing about jazz, didn't know how to keep a form, but that just doing that made me want it so much more. And it's the first time I ever stepped on stage for a musical. That's kind of how it felt in that moment. Just the magic of telling a story. And the more I've come to know about jazz, the more it's opened itself up as a way of expression for me, because it is so free and there are so many subgenres and so many people talking about so many different things with jazz that it's this big open community.
That's awesome. So first of all, I meant to ask, I didn't want to interrupt you. What song did you actually end up performing at the jazz night? I'm curious.
I performed Hey There from The Pajama Game. It was the musical we did my senior year, and it was actually one of the songs another character performed, but I was like, I'm so nervous. This is like the only song I know that like is remotely jazz, and then it kind of happened. And I think the video is still somewhere on my Facebook, and every so often I'll go back and listen to it, and it sounds like, you know, a musical theater person singing jazz, but it's kind of sweet. I'm like, huh, that's where it all started.
Yeah, it's great to look back at where you came from. You know, it's even better when you can look back on it fondly and, you know, not cringe at it like I do when I listen to my old episodes of Queer Mountaineers when I didn't really know much about editing or hosting.
There's definitely a little cringe, but it's more of like a, it's almost like an appreciation of just how far I've come, you know, it's quite astounding some days.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I definitely, well, I mean, I can say that I think mine's like 50-50 with the cringe and the pride type thing. Like, hey, I made something really cool and I've gotten to meet some really cool people through this and all that stuff. But oh, goodness me, I should have asked for help when I was just getting started. Oh, man. So you mentioned that you did the, I believe you said that you did like the Pajama Game when you were in high school, the musical. So I would like to ask, how long have you been performing for, any kind of performance?
The first like little musical theater class I ever took was in fifth grade. Before that, I started violin in third grade and switched to flute in fourth. So I've been performing in some capacity since I was very, very little. And I'm sure I was in like my church's like nativity pageant or something, you know, when I was just a wee lad. But I really started getting into like musical theater and that type of performance. The first show I did was in seventh grade. It was The Music Man. And that's the moment that I talked about when the curtains opens, like everyone in the house is like applauding. And I just looked out and I was like, whoa. I want to be here forever. And it was just like, I was just in awe. And then I was like, wait, I have things to do. I have things to sing. And I have things to, you know, I have places to be. But that moment is just so special. And I kind of, a lot of times I spend chasing that. And then, you know, when I get there, it's victorious. And then I joined choir in high school. And I think I always really knew that performing is where I wanted to be, but I didn't really decide on it until like halfway through like my sophomore year.
Wow, that's awesome. And that's really cool to hear about the musical theater experience that you have. Kind of jealous of the theater kids. I never really got the chance to get into theater. I was always so busy with sports. I always love hearing about like people who got started with theater and music. I always love hearing all about that. Yeah. Yeah, so you right now you are jazz is like, is that like your main, like the main genre you like performing, or do you have like other styles that kind of flow into your music?
So I say right now, the majority of my repertoire is split between classical operatic style and jazz. I'm working on a classical recital right now that's Die Streliebe. It's a German song cycle, typically sung by a tenor. I'm singing it up the octave, so that's really cool. And that's for my senior recital for my classical degree. And then most of my outside stuff right now is jazz influenced or jazz. Primarily, I'm in jazz lessons. Although, like on the side, I really love musical theater. I've continued to sing it all through college. After my freshman year, I was in a production of Hairspray. And after sophomore year, I was in American Idiot, which is by far the coolest show I have ever done.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, I was Extraordinary Girl and it was extraordinary. It was so cool.
I love American Idiot. I love the musical. I love the album, like all of it. And man, Extraordinary Girl is like one of my favorite songs from the show. So that it must have been amazing.
It was so cool. And even cooler was like the Broadway World Awards that year. I was nominated for Best Actress in like a professional musical that year in the Pittsburgh region in the same category as Betty Buckley and Jackie Burns, who both performed in shows in Pittsburgh that summer. And I have never been more like awestruck, gobsmacked, like whatever you want to say. That's like the one moment of my life that I just kind of stared in awe, like, whoa.
That is so cool. Well, at the time of this recording, you have an EP coming out, but even sooner you have a single coming out from said EP. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited. In like 3 days, my debut single, I Hope I'm Yours, is coming out to streaming platforms everywhere. And that one of the other moments I've kind of like waited for my whole life is just to have music out there for the world. Like, you know, little kid me was always like, maybe one day I'll write a song and then I'll play it and people will hear it. And now we're there. And that is so like humbling to me. And even more exciting is the EP, which I've spent through the Honors Excel program. I spent the better part of 2 years researching, writing, recording. It's called Queer Vespers, and it's a telling of my experiences as trans, non-binary, queer person in my life.
That's amazing. For people who don't go to WVU, which is a tiny bit of my audience, a lot of people are from Morgantown to listen to my little podcast, but do you mind like clarifying a little bit about what the Excel Project is for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, of course. So the Honors Excel Program is like the upper 2 years of like a typical four-year honors program. It's the upper 2 years. And to be accepted, you propose a research-based project that will take place over the top 2 years. And once accepted, you get funding and resources through the Honors College to do so. And so my project was based in writing, recording, and releasing a jazz EP. It's kind of evolved into queer jazz funk, as we like to call my genre.
I love that.
Thanks. Sierra and I spent a really long time trying to think of exactly how to like qualify like, you know, the genre that I've kind of created. And we settled on queer jazz funk poetry because at its essence, you know, all songs start at poetry and some of my songs have spoken word in them. And so that's definitely an essential part. But so then the other part of my Excel project is actually, you know, outreach and education as part of the land grant mission to, you know, give back to the community of West Virginia and to, you know, younger queer people everywhere. I've decided to put together an educational video series based on LGBTQ+ jazz artists and how their work has impacted me and given me space in the jazz community to, you know, write and perform my queer works. And it's crazy because before this past year, I really never would have known, besides maybe Billy Strayhorn, that there were other queer jazz musicians. It's mind blowing. There are so many that just either get swept under the rug or just not talked about as often, or, you know, the focus is more on their music rather than their identity. But if you listen to their music, their identity is right in there. And just like ignoring, you know, the history, of Black people in this country would be an injustice to jazz. I think ignoring the queerness of these artists would be an injustice to their work.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing with like queer people in music, it's, it feels like a lot of the people, a lot of queer artists are like right on like the cusp of like becoming like, you know, a little bit more well-known. Like I'm thinking, some people that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head are like King Princess. Like, I mean, even Hayley Kiyoko. I mean, yeah, she's a little bit slightly more well-known, but like even, you know, she's still like kind of feels underground at the same time, even though she's one of the more popular ones. I'm trying to remember who else I'm thinking of. Orville Peck is starting to get more popularity in the country's genre. Feel free to chime in with others.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Ray is one that I can think of who's up and coming. But I think what's interesting about that is because you can't really separate your queerness from your art, a lot of people see like someone who has like one song about being queer or who's open about their queerness and they're like, oh, they're a gay artist, not for me. And then just kind of write them off. Whereas, you know, queer people seeing, you know, straight or cishet artists, they're like, oh yeah, like they're so cool. But it sometimes doesn't reverse, which is something I'd like to work on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even like, I mean, I don't just like to brush someone off because they're straight, you know? Oh, it's a straight person's music. Let's see. So you mentioned queer jazz artists and all that. Would you mind like talking about some of the people who you've learned about or, you know, people that you think that others should be listening to? I'm always up for music recommendations.
Yeah. So I think what's really cool is I took a jazz history course last semester. And when we were talking about the genesis of jazz in this country, some of the first people we talked about are blues singers. And there is a good 3 to 5 lesbian blues singers that existed and are the most prolific, you know, blues singers of their time. Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, Ethel Waters, who was later on Broadway and had her own, like, you know, short run on Broadway. She got famous for singing Stormy Weather, which is not a blues, but she kind of bridged the blues into jazz standards. But Ma Rainey, there was a film released about her, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and it's based on a fictional work by August Wilson. There's another Pittsburgh connection, just like Billy Strayhorn from Pittsburgh. So first of all, that's really cool for me because I'm like, ooh, like queer jazz in my hometown. Just learning about Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, Ethel Waters, like that was the first moment where I was like, oh my gosh, like there are lesbian blues songs out there that exist. And I think that's the coolest thing. If you're looking for a specific song, Prove It On Me Blues by Ma Rainey. She says, like, she's like hanging around all her friends, must be women because I don't like men. I just think that, my mind was blown. I can't say that enough times.
My mind's being blown right now.
Yeah. And then you move into, you know, Billy Strayhorn, who's a Black gay pianist, and he wrote things like Gay Train and Lush Life. And one of the more recent people, Fred Hirsch, did a lot with, first of all, merging jazz and theater, but also talked about his own journey with HIV and AIDS. And really, I haven't heard a lot about that, but I'm also committed to the jazz community. So I just think it's so cool that, you know, there are people out there, alive or not, that have been talking about queerness and the problems issues in the queer community in jazz, and that I'm not, you know, alone in that journey.
That is so cool. I'm learning some of the new stuff about queer history today. I love that. I always am looking to learn more stuff, especially queer music history, because we've always been here, you know, and you know, you don't even have to look too hard to find them. You know, Bessie Smith is like one of the most famous, you know, blues singers. You know, if you don't know who she is, you should know who she is, you know. Oh my God, that's so cool. I love learning new things. So you mentioned that in your EP is, you know, the music in your EP is based off of your experience as, you know, a trans non-binary person. Do you mind sharing some of these things that kind of, you know, experiences that kind of influenced the music that you're sharing with us soon?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that because it's one of those things that putting out this EP is such a vulnerable thing for me because it has so many like moments that are special to me. I guess going from beginning to end, because that's really how I tried to write the album as one, you know, fluid, not necessarily story, but kind of a journey. So it starts off with a song called Gay Clubs Part One. And it's kind of a somber start. It's an homage to, the Pulse nightclub victims, and it has their names really like ingrained into the bass line. And it kind of, for me, it talks about my frustrations as I was first coming out as queer and finding myself, but even to this day that, you know, we go to gay clubs to find a safe space. And yet, you know, there's still so many places that aren't. And then kind of flowing through that and into the next piece, Kontakion, is an expression of my frustration with the church I grew up in, and utilizes Byzantine chant in a juxtaposition with, like, you know, me talking about being trans. And then the album kind of takes a turn into like where I would consider, like, I put my, like, discovery of being trans in the album. It's kind of this jazz waltz that reminds me of the part in Cinderella when she's like, I know who I am, but, like, why can't everyone see, you know, I'm a princess? And then right in the middle of my album is this spoken word piece called Timestamp Transition. And it's just me and my bass player. And it's this poem. And I talk about this moment that I had a lot with my parents growing up, where one of them would say, or I would say, like, oh, I'm turning in for the night. And they'd be like, to what? And I'd be like, oh, like, dragon, you know, or like something like that. And then it just using that as a metaphor to be like, oh, I'm turning into this now. And this is, you know, me showing myself to you guys. And then I think one of my favorite pieces is Gay Clubs Part 2, in which I really talk about like just the happiness that is, you know, a gay club or a safe space for queer people. And it's this, you know, swing revival with elements of electro swing, tap dance. It evokes like so many like sensory emotions and feelings that, and it was so fun to put together. I'm just excited for everyone to hear it.
I'm excited. I am getting excited to listen to this. Oh my goodness. I envy future me who gets to listen to this when this episode comes out.
Oh, I'm so excited. And so then, you know, moving into the last two pieces, the sixth tune, I Hope I'm Yours, which is the lead single, is just a super sappy love ballad that's like, oh, like maybe you met someone at the club and now you're kind of feeling that love. It could be towards yourself. I'm using it as like I'm singing it to, you know, like a queer lover. I just think that there needs to be more explicitly queer songs, and that was going to be one of them. And then, you know, it's kind of like the 11 o'clock hour song of like, oh, I just like need to sit down like with a mic in my hand on a stool and, you know, wail on a tune for a little bit. And then to round it out, I have this song called Space Gay, which when I wrote it at first, I hadn't heard of a jazz artist called Sun Ra, but when he was creating music, he used the concept of space to kind of be like, oh, like maybe in space, Black people will have the, you know, the space that they need to survive and not be harassed and killed in the numbers as they are. And so when I heard about that, I already had my lyrics to Space Gay, and they say, you know, maybe in space we'll have space, referring to the queer community, but really in terms of any marginalized community. And it's kind of electro futuristic, and it kind of goes into a little bit of like R&B right at the very end. But it's funny, you were saying, you know, there's so much going on. And if you look at each song individually, they're so different, but I really think like when you listen to it as a whole, it just paints this big picture of how vivid and interactive and complicated queerness is as a whole. And I'm hoping, you know, that for queer people, it's something that resonates with them. And for cishet people, it's something that they can use as a learning experience and like dipping their toes in the, you know, what it's like being a queer person and their experiences.
That's amazing. I'm only just getting hyped just thinking about this album and the album's EP, like all of these songs. Like I am always looking for queer artists to listen to. And like now I'm actually talking to a queer, you know, musician, and that is so cool. I had to gush for a second on your behalf.
Thank you. I'm like beyond excited. I think that's one of my goals, is to create a safe queer space in music, which there already is with people, you know, like King Princess, Hayley Kiyoko, and so many others, maybe less so in the jazz community, but just having that as a part of the normal in the music community is something that's so important to me. And, you know, I think growing up as someone who loved music, had I heard more like explicit, like purposeful queer music growing up, you know, maybe I would have felt more comfortable in my identity sooner.
I think that's something that a lot of queer people can relate to with any kind of art form, you know, music, movies, TV shows. And I'm just glad that, you know, there's people who are just, you know, making the world a gayer, queerer place with every bit of art they create. And thank you for your art.
Thank you for looking forward to it.
I gotta get it hyped up, you know, that's what this whole thing's about, getting it all hyped up. And also I was just dying to hear about the album, so thank you for sharing that. So in addition, of course, with your music, you know, you're a performer as well as a songwriter and all that stuff. Pandemic kind of changed how we access performing, doesn't it?
Most definitely. That was one of the biggest challenges for this project is, as soon as, you know, the first shutdown happened, or, you know, the shutdown that's continued, I was kind of like, oh, like, how is this project going to take shape? Like, I'm not going to be able to do a live performance. Oh my God, like, am I even going to be able to record? I was just kind of floored. But, you know, one of the things that they were telling us just the first semester of the Excel program was be prepared for, you know, unexpected things to happen. And, you know what, they did. All of the unexpected things, they happened. But I think, you know, the video series is one incredible thing that's gonna come out of this. I really didn't have the idea for that until after the pandemic. I was planning to maybe travel to a couple like local middle schools or something and do something like that. But I think that the audience that I'll reach is probably much greater in a virtual format, and it'll be accessible to, you know, as many school districts and colleges and classes as want to show it, or to professional musicians as well, who, many of whom, you know, I talk to my peers about queer jazz artists and they're like, well, we would have had no idea. And I'm like, well, this is why I'm doing it. But, and then I think the other thing that will be not a live performance, but there will be like a recorded concert of sorts coming after the release of the album. So stay tuned for details on that. I'm really, really excited for the production that's going to be. And I think it'll just be cool to have it in a concert setting because, like I said, I planned it as a cohesive piece. So to be able to perform it in a sense as a cohesive piece is gonna be an execution of, you know, anything I could have dreamed for the EP to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I was just gonna say, like, how have you adapted your performing to the digital age that we currently live in? But you kind of answered that already with that concert. So, I mean, let me know when that's gonna be available. I can put that in the description for the episode and put all the links. I also meant to ask, because at the time this will be released, your EP will be out and available. Where can people listen to it?
They can listen to it Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music. I believe it'll be available anywhere people listen is how I've heard that it will be. So if, you know, you're following me on any social media, I'll have links to it in my bios and on my website. So that'll all be easily accessible, hopefully.
Awesome. What do you want to do with music in the future? How do you want to keep going with this sort of thing? You have the ball rolling. Where do you hope it rolls to? That sounds more intelligent.
I really, really want to keep creating music. I mean, as early as starting right now, I just want to keep, I've been challenging myself, you know, in this new year, hopefully better year, to write a lot more than I did, because I know that's the only way I'm going to get better at expressing myself through poetry and music. And I eventually want to move to New York, hopefully after graduation at some point. And I know a few people up there, but I know that the community of artists up there is, there are artists of all kinds, visual artists, performing artists, multidisciplinary artists, there's musical theater, there's opera, there's jazz, there's anything you can imagine. And I want to be immersed in a little bit of all of that, because I do consider myself a multidisciplinary artist who doesn't want to be confined to just one thing. And I think, you know, continuing academia might subject me to that more so than I want at this moment. But Yeah, I just want to be, I just want to go somewhere and create.
Honestly, that's my answer for when people ask what I want to do after college as well. Like, I want to make queer, you know, I want to make queer media, you know. Except I can't say when I'm doing a job interview, but you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Well, how can people find you on social media? Do you want to drop some of your usernames while you're here?
Yeah, so my username on all social medias is the same. It's SirDollNG. I have Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. That's where you'll find some originals if you're interested in checking those out. My website is dollandghalkias.com, H-A-L-K-I-A-S. In case you're wondering about my Greek last name, I've had it spelled so many ways. I think I got all of them on there. And when, you know, my Spotify is available, that'll be Sir Dollandgh as well.
Make sure y'all are listening to Sir Dollandgh's EP coming out on March 5th on all the platforms. Thank you so much, Dollan, for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
It was so much fun. I loved coming on.
Make sure you're following Sir Dollandgh on all of their platforms, and make sure you stream Queer Vespers out now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you get your music from. If you like what you're hearing, you can follow the show on at Queer Mountaineers Podcast on Instagram, at Queer Ears Pod on Twitter, ears is spelled with two E's, and you can follow Queer Mountaineers on Facebook. Also, if you're listening to the show on iTunes, make sure you leave a review so that way more people can listen to the podcast. Thank you again for listening to Queer Mountaineers. I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon, and I'll see you all next time.